ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 8, chapter entitled The Churning of the Milk Ocean, text number 1. Shri Shuka Vacha Pite Gare Vrishankena प्रीतास्ते मरदानवाः ममन्थुस्तरसा सिन्धुम् हविर्धानी ततो भवत्। ट्रांसलेशन। शुकदेव गोस्वामी कंटिन्यूड अपॉन लॉर्ड शिवाज ड्रिंकिंग द पॉइजन, both the demigods and the demons, being very pleased, began to churn the ocean with renewed vigor. As a result of this, there appeared a cow known as Surabhi. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. The Surabhi cow is described as Havirdhani, the source of butter. Butter, when clarified by melting, produces ghee or clarified butter, which is inevitably necessary for performing great ritualistic sacrifices. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yajna Dana Tapah Karma Na Tyajyam Karyam Eva Tat. Sacrifice, charity, and austerity are essential to keep human society perfect in peace and prosperity. Yajna, the performance of sacrifice, is essential. To perform yajna, clarified butter is absolutely necessary. And to get clarified butter, milk is necessary. Milk is produced when there are sufficient cows. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 18.44, cow protection is recommended. Krishi go rakshavanijyam Vaishya Karma Subhavacham. Hare Krishna. Shri Shuka Vacha Pite Gare Vrishankena Pritaste Mardanavaha Mamanthus Tarasa Sindhum Havirdhani Tato Bhavat. Shukadev Goswami continued, upon Lord Shiva's drinking the poison, both the demigods and the demons, being very pleased, began to churn the ocean with renewed vigor. As a result of this, there appeared a cow known as Surabhi. So, the 8th chapter, a new chapter of the 8th canto, is beginning today. And in this chapter, to summarize, there is going to be the description of how the churning process took place and what beneficial products came out. The previous chapter ended with the poison coming out. Before that, there were the flames. But after this, it's going to be all very pleasing. And various attractive fruits are going to come and different claims will be laid to them. by the demigods and the demons. Finally, there will be the goddess of fortune. She will also appear, searching for a husband. And ultimately, she will choose Lord Vishnu as her husband. And ultimately, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Lord as Dhanvantari will appear with the pot of nectar. The demons will snatch it from Dhanvantari's hands. However, demigods will become very much depressed, seeing that the demons have got the pot of nectar. But Lord Vishnu will pacify them by telling them, just wait, see what happens. Demons can never be satisfied, even if they get what they want. So they start fighting amongst each other, not wanting to share. And then Lord Vishnu will take the beautiful form of the only female incarnation that he ever takes, at least in the revealed scriptures, in the human form or the divine human form, human-like form as Mohini Murti. And that will be the summary, the end of this chapter. And the exploits of Mohini Murti will be revealed in the next chapter. So that is the summary. And I will be concentrating on two lines of thought. One is the one idea is from the purport, where Srila Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita 18.5. Yagya dana tapah karma na tyajyam karma eva tat. And since it is going to be the cow weekend, and we are Govind Prabhu and Madan Gopal Prabhu and their hordes of sympathizers, including me, strong sympathizers, they are strong-willed. They will be starting tomorrow morning. Govind Prabhu will be giving his class, followed by the well-publicized class of Madan Gopal Prabhu. So, in front of such luminaries, what can I speak about the cow? Anyways, if I don't speak, it would be injustice to the purport also and to such great devotees. So I'll try to just open the game as a night watchman with a few runs on the score, keeping the match open till tomorrow. We have to last today. Tomorrow is a big day. So please bear with me. But first, this. Srila Prabhupada immediately brings in the topic of how one must perform one's activities, especially charity, sacrifice, and austerity. In fact, in the purport to 18.5, Srila Prabhupada mentions that all our activities, this is the theme, that all our activities should have elements of these. And the idea is being taken from Baldev Vidya Bhushan's commentary on 18.5. So the verse is, in the 18th chapter, again Arjuna wants to confirm, because obviously this is the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and it could be one of the final instructions that Krishna gives before the war starts. So he actually wants to confirm from Krishna again, what should I do? And how does he put forward his query? By asking Krishna, what is better, renunciation or to do work? Again, the same question. But here it has a deeper meaning. So Krishna answers the question by giving an elaborate description of what is renunciation in three words and how one should carry out one's work. So in 18.5, the verse, the Supreme Lord states, यज्ञदान तपः कर्म न त्याजं कारमेव तत् यज्ञदानं तपश्चैव पावनानि मनीषिणाम्। Srila Prabhupada here has quoted this verse. It has to have some relevance to what Srila Prabhupada is building up. The theme. The theme is that there is a need for butter which is going to be used for sacrifice for a certain purpose. It is not that butter was in great excess in the previous ages and therefore better use it for sacrifice. It was not like that. The reason was, as the verse, fifth verse in the 18th chapter of the Gita states, Pavanani Manishinam. It is very essential that human society, they live their life. Every individual in human society live their lives such that ultimately the goal achieved is purification of one's consciousness. That is the purpose of human existence, to purify one's consciousness. Now, of all the species of life, within the human form, there is great facility for doing work and a great impetus for carrying out work. The independence allocated within the field of one's activity or kshetra is immense. There's a lot of potential within the human form of life. And therefore, within the human form of life, also the cycle of karma is very much implemented. The laws of karma. For every action, there is supposed to be a reaction. Now, because there is a strong impetus to carry out work, work will be done. Or activity will be performed. In the 18th chapter, Krishna says, he is addressing Arjuna and he is enthusing him. Carry out your work such that there is purification of heart. And how does purification of heart take place? Yajna, dana, tapas, chaiva. Cha means certainly, eva means definitely, there is no other. In other words, these three activities have to be within, they have to form the principal foundation block of all the activities that are performed within human society. If these three elements are there, definitely one's activities will bring about purification of heart. Within the purport to 18.5 Srila Prabhupada, he explains, he gives an idea as to how these three principles work. First he says austerities, and he says yogis, they are definitely performing so many austerities. The goal of all austerities should be that there should be, it should bring about an advancement in human consciousness, in the sum total of human consciousness in human society. And therefore, yogis are always engaged in trying to bring about an advancement in human consciousness, the sum total of human consciousness. The yogis will always be engaged in that. And hence, austerities are meant for bringing about an elevation in the consciousness of the entire human society. Thus, austerities should be performed by everyone. Why just yogis? It should be performed by everyone. Sacrifice and dana, charity. The second point that within the purport he explains charity to a great deal. Charity brings about purification of the heart. Because by doing some charity, one gives up the desire to enjoy the fruit. And therefore, charity is important to be carried out. And sacrifice is meant for the purpose of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Yajna. So thus, with the principles of trying to raise the consciousness of the entire human society, to purify one's own consciousness, and ultimately to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is essential that one should perform activities with these three principles: yajna, dana, and tapa. And Krishna uses, he strongly recommends not to give up these activities. Na tyajyam karyam eva tat. Karya or activities which contain the principles of charity, sacrifice, and austerities, one should willingly take it up and one should not give it up. One should not give up such activities. And the next verse is also important, 15.6. How does one not, or how will one be enthused or enthusiastic in performing activities with these three principles? Therein, in that chapter, the mood of performing this act or the mood of doing any activity is being explained. The mood in which we do an activity resulting in yajna, dana, and tapa, that ultimately will raise one's consciousness to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and sum total of everyone's consciousness. That mood is being described by Krishna in the next verse, 15.6. Etane apitu karmani sangam tyaktva falani cha kartavyani tin me partha nishitam matam uttamam. Now here Krishna is stressing his opinion, because it is the conclusion of his instructions to Arjuna. So hence he uses the word nishitam uttamam matam. Matam, whose matam? Me matam. It is my opinion. Definitely it is my opinion. Obviously I am not going to change it again. This is the conclusion. And it is the topmost opinion. So in Surrender Unto Me, Bhurijan Prabhu writes, when Krishna is giving his opinion, which he says is the topmost opinion, obviously no one else's opinion is of much value. Krishna's opinion has to be taken, because he says, me matam uttamam nishchitam. Definitely this is my opinion. And what is my opinion? Etani tu sarvani karmani, those activities which have been mentioned in the previous verse, which contain the principles of yajna, dana, and tapa. Etani tu sarvani karmani, all of those activities. He is no longer saying all activities in human society, because all activities in human society can be of two kinds. And Prabhupada in the purport will explain those two kinds. Here he is saying, etani tu sarvani karmani, those activities which have been mentioned in the fifth verse, 18.5. Which means, only those activities which have yajna, dana, and karma. Not the second category of activities. So all of those activities which are having the principles of yajna, dana, and karma, they must be performed with these two principles in one's attitude or the mood. One is sangam tyaktva and tyaktva falani. The first one is sangam tyaktva. Sangam tyaktva means giving up attachment to those activities in the form of I am the doer of this activity. You see, when one becomes attached to performing certain activity, the mood that I will do it, whatever happens, comes. Right? Sometimes in India, because the Hindi language is predominant, you say, mujhe karna hai bas, karunga. Where does that mood come from? I am the doer. Dekhta hun kon rokega. Let me see who can stop me, because I will definitely do this activity. So that is called sangam tyaktva. That attachment has to be removed. Unless until that attachment is gone, we will not be performing even these activities, proper activities, in the proper mood. And the result will not be obtained. But that is not enough. There has to be falani tyaktva, or one has to be free. One has to give up the results or the attachment to the fruits of one's activity. One have to give up the desire to enjoy the fruits of the activity. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, or maybe it is in Surrender Unto Me, activities are not condemned. In fact, it is very much essential for everyone to perform activities. Activity in itself does not give one reaction. Any action in itself does not give the reaction. The reaction is brought about in what mood or in what attitude one performs that activity. And therefore, these two points are very essential. Sangam tyaktva and phalanicha. Giving up attachment to being the doer and not wanting to enjoy the fruits. Now, these again are stressed in a deeper mood. In the 18th chapter, Krishna is stressing a deeper principle. He is saying, it is no longer just karma yoga, but it is bhakti yoga that is being explained here. It is not even nishkam karma yoga that is being explained here. Although the principle seems to be the same, if we see in the first six chapters, the same principle will be advocated by Krishna. But there in karma yoga or nishkam karma yoga in the later chapters will be also explained on the same two principles. Herein it is pure devotional service that is being explained. Arjuna fight without being attached to the results and without trying to enjoy. Without being attached to being the doer and without trying to enjoy the results of the battle that will happen. How to do it? Kartavya niti. And that kartavya Krishna will explain in 18.65 and 66. What is that kartavya? Do it as a duty. And what is a duty? This duty is not duty, ordinary duty. Or because it is my dharma, as my religious duty, therefore I do it. It is duty out of love. You see, parents also out of love perform their duty. The government also performs its duty. But not out of love. So this duty, this kartavya that is being explained here, kartavyani iti, thus, according to the principles of pure devotional service in love, Krishna has told me to do it. Therefore, without attachment and without desire to enjoy, I have to function. Thus, when Krishna will introduce the topic of Sarva Dharmantar Parityajya, Arjuna will ask no more questions. It is the climax. It is the conclusion. So, Bhurijan Prabhu is explaining there that Krishna is explaining the true standard of renunciation as detachment from the fruits of work while performing one's duty in Krishna consciousness. And in the purport to that verse, there's another verse which is being referenced to from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3rd canto, Kapil Devahuti Samvad, that how one must perform one's, or what type of activities one must perform. Neha yat karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate na tirtha pada sevayai jivanapi mruto hisaha. If one's activities does not raise one to the platform of religious principles or religious duty, if one's performance of religious ritualistic activities does not elevate one's consciousness to the platform of renunciation, and if anyone's renunciation is not such that it leads to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service, such a person, although living, is dead. Death means rebirth. Life is eternal. And leads to a beginning. But continuity means eternal life. So, jivan here does not mean life which is leading to death. in the third canto, but Jivan is referring to eternal life. So if one wants eternal life, or one wants to be situated in one's constitutional position as spirit soul, then one must be free from death. And who, although living, is still dead? Someone who has a facility to perform activities which can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead and does not do so. Such a person, although living, is dead. Hence, Srila Prabhupada says, sacrifice, charity and austerity are essential to keep human society perfect in peace and prosperity. Because when there is peace and prosperity, there are the facilities to render devotional service to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In war, one cries out for help, for protection from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But peace is where one can give up aham and mameti. When there is peace and prosperity, there are no immediate demands on oneself. And peace and prosperity is achieved by yajna, dan and tapa. Now, that brings us to the second topic. Now, if yajna, dan and tapa have to be performed, and one of the principles is yajna, which pleases the Supreme Personality of God. Dan brings about purification of consciousness. Austerity elevates the consciousness, can elevate the consciousness of the sum total of human society. Sacrifice is meant for pleasing the Supreme Personality of God, as Srila Prabhupada explains in 18.5. So if yajna is what pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how does one perform yajna? And that brings us to the second topic. Protection of cows. Here, it is said, with great force, they were churning the ocean of milk. Previously also they were doing. However, what was produced was, there was intense discomfort because of flames coming from the mouth of Vasuki. The entire atmosphere is covered by these, by the fumes. It was dark. And ultimately poison was released, which was accepted by Lord Shiva. After the poisonous effects of the churning was minimized, the poison was accepted by Lord Shiva. With renewed vigor, Tarasa, with renewed force and vigor, with great force, they again started churning the ocean of milk. And now, since the beneficial products are going to come out, the first item is the cow. It is just like the entire process of churning will now be just like a yajna or a sacrifice. And it is so very symbolical that the cow, the Surabhi cow, comes out first. She appears first, signifying that now the rest of the ingredients that you are going to get from this yajna, the phala, that is yajna phala that is going to be achieved, the fruit that is going to be achieved, will be very beneficial for all of you. Someone will get a nice horse, someone will get a nice elephant, someone will get wine, not regular wine but divine wine, Varuni. Someone will get the Parijat flower, the Apsaras, someone will claim, so on and so forth. And ultimately, the nectar of life. The Lord will come with that. Lakshmiji will also be appearing. And all of this, the first thing, the first personality that appears is the Surabhi cow. Why? Because the very word Surabhi means she who can provide in abundance that which is beneficial. Yes? So Krishna, Surabhi Abhipalayantam. He is always tending to the Surabhi cows. Krishna is a source of abundance, and Surabhi cow is the wonderful representation of the Supreme Lord who provides everything in abundance. Now, generally, the Surabhi cow, the word Surabhi and the word Kamadhenu are used conjointly with the same meaning, having the same meaning. Except in one purport, Actually, in one translation in the Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 4th chapter, 16th verse, a little distinction is made between the two. Surabhi is a cow in the spiritual world, and Kamadhenu or Kamadugha, Kamadhuk, is a cow in the heavenly planets. For us, it doesn't make much difference. You know, in one of his lectures, Gauranga Prabhu was mentioning a similar point. He was explaining something else. And he said, for a pauper, you know, someone very poor who does not have any money, 1 million rupees or 100 billion rupees, what is the difference for him? It is almost, you know, as if he has received unlimited money. Now, someone who is a millionaire 100 times, 100 million rupees is nil compared to 100 billion. But to someone who is a pauper, what difference does it make? So for us, what difference does it make whether it is Kamadhenu or Surabhi? Both provide an abundance. Yes? Both provide an abundance. So most of the Puranic stories will have the Kamadhenu cow, who provides an abundance that which is necessary within the realm of the universe. However, they can also be referred to as Surabhi cows, for they are the representation of the mother cow in the spiritual world, in the material world. They are the Kamadhenu cows. And the word Kamadhenu also means she who fulfills all one's desires in abundance. There's nothing more to be that is needed when the Kamadhenu cow is approached. Cow protection, is it important? Yes. It will be dealt with more tomorrow. So we covered first how the Surabhi cow or the Srila Prabhupada, in one purport, when the Surabhi cow has been mentioned in the Bhagavatam, he says, Surabhi cow is that which provides in abundance all that you want eternally, including Kamadhenu cow. It is not that, no, she's like an ATM, she's not like the regular ATM machine. You know, only 3 times in a day you can approach it, at least in India. You cannot withdraw more than 3 times. After that, it is locked. And only to a certain amount. You take as much as you want from her right now. And then if someone comes in and you need more, you can again approach her and get as much more. And she does it without taxing her muscles at all. She doesn't need to, you know, really stress herself. She does it very in a very pleasing mood. She offers everything again and again and again and again. Srila Prabhupada says, the devatas and the maharshis, they have the Surabhi cow. He was explaining about Vasishtha Muni. There is incidence of Vasishtha Muni and his Surabhi cow, his Kamadhenu cow. He says, today in human society, we may not have a Surabhi cow, but still we have cows. And they provide sufficient milk. If we properly take care of them, they will provide, a cow, even today, will provide sufficient for any human being, single human being, to survive comfortably, in proper comfort. Tomorrow, it will be explained how every aspect of the cow does provide many facilities. However, that is secondary. That is a gauna quality of the cow. The mukhya lakshan of the cow is that she is very pleasing to Krishna. Krishna loves her. Thus, we protect. Thus, we take her benefits from her. Yes, our mind may question, is it possible? Can we do it? Is it practical? Well, if we look at the mukhya lakshan of cow protection, then there is no question that we have to do it. Because Krishna loves the cow. He loves everyone, but specifically his Gopal, in his incarnation of Gopal. Even in his other incarnations, he has favored the cow always. Although, in the Bhagavatam, Shukdev Maharaj refers to the cow sometimes as a person who is unintelligent is like a gokhara, like a cow and an ass. That way also it has been explained. However, those arguments fall when we are discussing the gauna lakshana for cow protection. The secondary qualities that may be discussed for cow protection. Oh, she gives this, she gives that, she is beneficial in this way, she is beneficial in that way. Those are secondary reasons. For the cow is not someone who is supposed to satisfy our sensory needs. The cow is Krishna's own tadiya. In this material world, she is someone who is very close to Krishna. Just approaching her makes us remember Krishna. There are few, everything in the world does, you know, we can ultimately, it is related to Krishna. But the cow directly makes us remember Gopal. She has such a close connection with Krishna. Hence, cow protection is important to whatever extent we can. We should not be lazy. If it is possible to do it on level 4 or level 10 of cow protection, we should try to implement that. Whatever is possible for us, we should try to implement. If we cannot do the topmost level, at least on some level, we should try to assist cow protection. And endeavor to go to the next higher level. Why? Someone asked the question. This was a question which is being very much asked nowadays in many forums where cow protection is being discussed. Why is the cow considered to be so special? Is it because Hindu dharma stresses so? The word here is Havirdhani. A cow here is being referred to as Havirdhani. Havi means items that are offered as oblations into the sacred fire. That is Havi. And Dhani means the repository, the resting place. Therefore, words like Jivadhanim, Devadhanim are there in the Bhagavatam. Devadhanim means Indra's lok, the house or the resting place of Indra. Jivadhani means Lord Vishnu. Garbhodakshay Vishnu is the resting place of all the Jivas. And Havirdhani means she who is the repository of all Havi. And why is Havi important in this world? On a lower platform, it is necessary to maintain peace and prosperity in the universe. For the universe functions on the principle of cooperation between the living entities on the Bhul platform, the Bhuloka, and the living entities in Swargaloka. Nice reciprocal exchange where both are benefited. The Devas are benefited and the Manishyas are benefited. This allows the universal laws to properly function, and by these laws, there's proper benefits accrued. Like today in Kali Yuga, the universal laws are going a little haywire. Rains fall anytime. There's drought in places where drought should not be there. There's so much quarrel, so much strife. And if you see, there are certain elements in society who want or who are propagating and advertising activities which inculcate values to not follow the activities which allow reciprocation between the Devas and the humans. If their reciprocation between Devas and humans are not proper, the Devas, they lose connection with the humans, the protection of the Devas is lost, the demonic forces increase. And there will be strife, there will be problems increasing in human society. Demons may not be directly present, but they will influence those who have demonic tendencies. And the clash between the demons and the devatas always goes on. In all the four yugas, a clash is going on. In Kali Yuga, it happens within the heart of the living entity, definitely. This is how they influence. So if we have proper reciprocation with the devatas, then there is proper rainfall, proper food grains. No need to go to the market searching for organic food. In the previous ages, they would not do that, because it was properly being received. There's no need for going to the gyms. There's no need for going to search for pure water. Because the devatas are providing all of this. Why the devatas are providing? The humans were reciprocating with them through yajnas or sacrifices meant for them. Whenever the forces in human society performed activities which favored the demons, then all the benefits that humans need decreases slowly. In Dwapara Yuga, that is what they tried through Duryodhan. And when he was unsuccessful and wanted to take up the life of renunciation, he was again influenced by the demons when they took him to their planets, lower planets, and told him, "Don't worry, we are with you. Go back and destroy the fabric of pious human society." And how is the fabric of pious human society destroyed? That is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam through one verse in the 7th canto. Or rather in the 10th canto. Where Kansa has been faced by Yogamaya, who says, your killer has appeared somewhere else. So give up your demonic tendency. So Kansa repents. He asks for forgiveness from Vasudeva and Devaki and also speaks philosophy that everything happens by karma and time. We are simply instruments. So please forgive me. He also asks for forgiveness. Not just he says, my activities, you know, karma is to blame or time is to blame. He says that happens according to karma and time. But at the same time, please forgive me for being that instrument. And then he goes back. He frees them and he goes back. He sleeps for the night. The next morning he calls his ministers and he tells them what happened. The ministers are less intelligent. Therefore, they ill-advise him. They say, oh dear Kansa, if the baby has been born somewhere else, let us kill all the babies in the neighboring surrounding areas who have been born within the previous 10 days or slightly more. You are Maharaj Kansa. When you sound your bowstring, the devatas, they are fearful. In the battlefield, whenever you shoot your arrows, the devas are defeated. Some of them simply run away. Some of them, when they can no longer challenge you, they start glorifying you. They take shelter of you. Others who become fearful of you, they fold their hands and beg you, please forgive us, accept us as your servants. Seeing someone bereft of their chariot, someone not being able to fight, someone else who's come to beg mercy from you, or otherwise who is not desirous to continue on fighting, you never trouble those devatas. Forgive them. Such is your magnanimous nature. But so we can understand. There's nothing to fear from the devas. And as far as Lord Shiva is concerned, he is in the forest on the Kailash meditating. Lord Vishnu is concerned, he is gone into seclusion within the heart of the yogis. And Brahma is concerned, he is engaged in austerities and penances, sacrifices. So there's no trouble from them also. You are the supreme Lord and Master here. But the devas have a unique quality, you know. When they're not on the battlefield behind your back, they boast of their abilities. But when they come in front of you and understand how powerful you are, they beg your forgiveness. So, I can understand you should be unconcerned about them. However, there is a constant enmity always between the devas and us. The devas are always inimical towards us. Therefore, it is intelligent that one must never ever show any alasya towards them, show any laziness in one's dealing with them. One should always keep them subdued. Just like if a disease in its initial stage is not controlled, then later on when it manifests over the whole body, it cannot be cured. Or the senses initially when not controlled, when they are totally berserk, will not be able to control them. Similarly, one's enemies, if initially they are not subdued, later on when they become powerful, they may defeat us. They say, Mulam hi Vishnu Devana Yatra Dharma Sanatanaha Tasya cha Brahma Go Vipras Tapo Yagya Sadakshinaha. The devatas become very powerful because they are Mula, or because they are protected by Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu is always powerful wherever there is Sanatana Dharma existing. Wherever there is Vedic culture existing, wherever there are people who want to implement Vedic culture powerfully, you know, implementing them, the Brahmans, Brahmanas, wherever there is cow protection, wherever there are the Vipras or learned personalities, learned Brahmanas, wherever there is austerities and wherever there is Yajna with proper remuneration. Therefore, Tasmat sarvatmana rajan brahman brahmavadina tapasvino yagyashilan gashya hanmo havirduga. You give us the order that we can hanmo, we can destroy the brahmanas, the brahmavadinas, or those who are for Vedic culture, proper Vedic culture. We can kill them. Those who are yagyashila, or those who can perform yagyas nicely. Those who are tapasvino, those who can perform austerities nicely, and also those who protect the cows and the cow itself let us destroy, because Havir Dughaha, she gives the milk which provides the necessary ingredient for sacrifice, which allows the devatas to become powerful, and Lord Vishnu becomes powerful because everything else becomes powerful by Havir Dughaha. So the principle wherein demoniac tendencies in society become powerful and demons will become more powerful is that the reciprocation between the devatas and the humans should stop. And ultimately the reciprocation between Krishna and the living entities should stop or should be decreased. And the most powerful way to do it is kill the cow. Because there is no Havi anymore. Devatas are satisfied through yajna. When they receive the Havi, that is what gives them power. Krishna is satisfied through yajna, sankirtan yajna. Hence, the cow is protected. Not because it is simply some religious dharma, because Hindus like cows. No. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, also, in the discussion with the Qazi, Lord Chaitanya asks him this very question. Cow gives you milk, she is like mother. Bull produces abundance of grains, he is like father. You eat the cow and the bull, all the Yavanas eat the cow and the bull. Why do you kill your own mother and father? And how come you follow principles which allow killing of your own mother and father? The Qazi is very intelligent, he says, and very well read. He says, there are scriptures, according to the principles that I follow, there are two ways of attaining perfection. One is pravritti marg, nivritti marg. In the pravritti marg, it is allowed that we kill cows in sacrifice according to the injunctions, scriptural injunctions. Even in your Vedas and Puranas, such cow killing is allowed. Isn't it? And Lord Chaitanya says, whenever the Vedas and Puranas mention this, it is only when the cow which is being offered in sacrifice can be revived. If the cow cannot be revived, such sacrifices cannot be done. If the brahmanas are confident of reviving the cow and giving it a new and better life, then they can perform sacrifices. In Kali Yuga, there are no qualified brahmanas. Therefore, Kali Yuga, these are five activities that have been they are recommended to be stopped. And one of them is cow sacrifice or cow killing. And then Lord Chaitanya says, Prabhu kahe veda kahe govadhya nished ateva hindu matra na kare govad. Because the Vedas say that one should not do cow killing, which also means there should be cow protection. Therefore Hindus, they are against cow killing. And another place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is going to discuss with Haridas Thakur about Sankirtan Yajna or chanting of the holy names. There he says, Haridasu kale kale yavana par gobrahmane hingsa kare mahadurachar. He says, in Kali Yuga, this is going to be seen rampantly. Why? Because there are going to be many Yavanas. One, those who are externally Yavanas, directly doing, you know, go Brahman Hingsa. Both of them are required for sacrifice. Proper Brahmanas to chant the mantras for sacrifice and cow to give the Havi for sacrifice. And therefore, go Brahman Hingsa. Violence to them and killing them will be the principle what the Yavanas follow. Right? So, Yavana apar, there will be those who directly support go Brahman Hingsa or violence towards cows and Brahmanas, and those who will indirectly support with the idea that what other way is there for us to. We are intelligent human beings. We find ways out of so many difficult situations. Tomorrow, some of this will be discussed. I won't go into detail. I'm just giving some principles, some places where in the Chaitanya Charitamrita these are there. So this will be there in Kali Yuga. However, Lord Chaitanya also says, Hindu matra na kare govadha. He uses the word Hindu because the word Hindu was prevalent then very much 500 years back. What it means is those who follow Sanatana Dharma, they never ever support in any form cow killing. In Krishna Leela, there are two instances where there has been cow killing by Lord Krishna himself. One is Vatsasura and the other is Rishabhasura or Arishtasura, the same thing. He, bull. And in both instances, Krishna, in one instance, he himself wants to undertake penance. Prayaschitta. And another one, he is told to do Prayaschitta. So after Vatsasura is a demon sent by Kamsa, comes as a calf. And Krishna is just a young cowherd boy. He's as yet Gopal, means less than 5 years of age. But he goes out with the calves, 4 years of age maybe. Vatsasura comes as a demon. Krishna signals Balaram. See, he's actually a demon. So both of them, they sneak behind the demon. Krishna catches the demon by the hand, legs and the tail, swings him around and around, and the demon loses his life. Then Krishna tells all his friends. He throws him on a kapitha tree. Kapitha is a beautiful sweet fruit in, I don't know where it is, in Vrindavan it is. It has seed and nice pulp. Kapitha fruit. So the cowherd boys are happy to have the fruit also. And then Krishna says, I have killed a calf. I must do penance. I must take bath in the Ganga. So within his mind he calls the Ganga. And she manifests as Ganga in Vrindavan close to Govardhan. Krishna takes his bath there. Since he invited the Ganga by his mind there, that place is called Manasi Ganga. Even today we go and take shelter of Manasi Ganga, trying to become free from however, you know, we may be connected to lack of cow protection. And another place is Arishtasur. Came as a bull. And he was trying to harm the Brajavasis. Krishna was with the gopis at that time. Krishna ultimately killed Arishtasur. They had a fight. Then he killed Arishtasur. So the gopis say, you've killed a bull. You've killed a cow. Krishna said, it is a demon. No, it is sinful. You must do prayaschitta. So how should you do? So they said, you should go and take bath in all the holy tirthas in the universe, in their waters. So within his mind, Krishna invites all of them. And the hoof print of Arishtasur, he asks all of them to collect there. They all come there in personified form, revealing to everyone, we are the holy tirthas, holy waters, and they form Shyamakund. And later on, Radhakund is also revealed. So, this is my understanding. If we can properly atone for what we have unconsciously done by trying to take up means of proper cow protection, that is one repentance. And definitely, cow protection cannot be done with proper hearing and chanting of the holy names and Bhagavad Katha. That has to be done. Then wonderful places, tirthas, like Manasi Ganga and Radha Kund and Shyam Kund, they shower their blessings. In recent times also, in the Puranic story, this will be, I think, so covered by Govind Prabhu tomorrow. There are two instances of Gohatya related to rishis. Or not just Hatya, not Hatya actually. There are two instances of Himsa to cows, violence committed to cows. One is in case of Vishishta Vishwamitra Muni, and another is, that is there explained in the Mahabharata, and the other is in, and also in the Ramayana, yeah, also in the Ramayana. And the other is Jamadagni and Kartavirya Arjun. And both of them will be covered. Both of them, they went to the sage's place. Vishwamitra as a king went to Vashishta's hermitage. Vashishta honored him and his hundreds of soldiers by asking Sabala, his cow. In one place, Srila Prabhupada says the cow's name is Nandini. Either way, she may have both names. Both are appropriate. So Sabala is a Kamadhenu cow. From her udders, she provides unlimited facilities to eat, drink and stay for all the soldiers. So Vishwamitra Muni becomes impressed. He says, I am the king of the place. I should have the best of everything. So please give me the cow. Vishishta says, for thousands of years she has served me. She assists me in my Agnihotra Yajnas. How can I just let her go now? She has taken shelter of me. So Vishwamitra says, if you don't give me, then with my prowess, I will take her away. You cannot stop her. So with his power, he starts dragging Sabala away. Vashishya says, you are the king. You are a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya takes things by force. That is his, you know, the way he acts. His attitude. Your Sabhava is like that. I am a Brahmana. I am a Rishi. My Sabhava is to forgive and be tolerant. Therefore, I forgive you for what you are doing. Now, as a cow is being dragged, Sabala, she calls out to Vasishtha and says, why are you abandoning me, O great sage, O master? Have I offended you in some way that you are, you know, you are sending me away? I am being dragged away by this king. I don't want to go. And she forcibly frees herself from Vishwamitra and runs to Vasishtha. And Vasishtha says, I know, but what can I do? He is a powerful king and right now he is very arrogant and in ignorance. I am a Brahmana, poor Brahmana. What can I do? Weak. Sabala understands the inner meaning of what Vasishtha is saying. She says, however powerful a Kshatriya may be in front of a Brahmana's powers, just his words are more powerful than all of the Kshatriya's prowess. You just tell me to stay and see how much prowess those words have. Vasishtha, now he can, because the cow is taking shelter of him now. And it is dharma to protect the cow. So he says, stay. Now when Vishwamitra comes now, the cow from her body and from her udder produces such armies that all of Vishwamitra's soldiers are killed. All of his 100 sons are killed except one. Vasishtha allows him to stay. And then Vishwamitra goes on to do penances to become more powerful or as powerful as Vasishtha. So here we see, this is the principle. What is there will be most probably discussed by Govind Prabhu tomorrow. There is a very important principle in this story. And also in the case of Jamadagni, the same thing happened. Kartavirya Arjun, when Arjuna was born, the son of Pandu, you know, an expansion of Indra, the friend of Krishna, a celestial voice proclaimed, this son of yours, name him Arjun. He will be as powerful and famous as King Kartavirya and King Shibi. And the same Kartavirya Arjun was destroyed. He was killed ruthlessly, horribly. First his arms were cut, 1,000 arms. His body was mutilated with the blows of Parshuram, and his head was chopped off. Gory death. Why? Because when he went to the ashram of Jamadagni, and Jamadagni similarly served him nicely with the help of his Kamadhenu cow, he took the cow and the calf also. The calf was young and the cow was giving milk to the calf. He dragged them to his kingdom, Mahishmati. When the son of Jamadagni, Parashuram, came, he took up his Parashu and went and destroyed Mahishmati totally. So, it is not just the principle of cow protection that is there, but there is another sense, very important principle. Why did these people, who were the followers of Vedic Dharma in one sense, they were religious kings in one sense, they were properly respecting the rishis, how did they fall down to the level of doing Gohinsa? For that, please come tomorrow in the Bhagavatam class. I'm going to conclude with two recent stories, because sometimes we wonder there are only Puranic stories of cow protection. This happened pre-independence time. There was a king of Jammu. And today sometimes we wonder, right? I mean, India, things have gone completely haywire, you know, totally out of control. Especially if you go to North India, certain places you find in Bihar and UP where there is a lot of cow protection, you find cows roaming on the streets, there's traffic jams. And we are wondering, why do we advocate so much cow protection? Because cows are causing so many problems to us in cities. In Bombay, they have banned cows from being inside the jurisdiction of Bombay Corporation, except in some localized areas. See, one thing we have to understand is, in a proper society, there was a specific area reserved for cows and an immense ground given for cow grazing. Today, we have usurped all of that. And we have formed cities right around where cows have stayed for ages. And now we want to send them outside? Simply because they are stopping our traffic? And how arrogant can humans become? Can't we be a little patient and go around her? or give her the facility that rightfully is hers since so many generations? Where have all her passioning grounds gone? We have built our big towers on them. And then when she has nowhere else to go, we either send her to the slaughterhouse or we send her outside the city. Transport her outside the city. Why commit, you know, if it is done on humans, we call it genocide. You know, proper, certain section of society means targeted and being annihilated. Tomorrow, Madan Gopal Prabhu is going to give us statistics of how genocide is being done in cow society. And human beings, simply, we are concerned for genocide on Jews, we are concerned for genocide on Hindus, genocide on Muslims, genocide on this and that. What about genocide on cows? Mass quantities, they are being ruthlessly being killed and also not being given a place to stay. So considering that, this story is a true story. The king of Jammu was coming with his entire entourage and he was on his elephant. Now if you've been on an elephant, horse riding is easier because you can maneuver houses. Even buffaloes can be maneuvered, but elephants, if they are walking on a path, we have to be very careful how to maneuver them because sudden turns and they will fall. So he was coming on the elephant and suddenly the whole entourage stopped and there was some commotion going on ahead. The movement was not taking place. So the king got down from his chariot or from the elephant mount, went ahead, and he saw some soldiers trying to push out a cow from the road. He immediately went to that person, chastised him. He took away his position as a soldier in his army. He sent him back. And he said, "Don't you know she's mother cow? She should not be moved. We should go by another road." Now this was just pre-independence time. So let us say just maybe 50-100 years back. What happened in 50-100 years? Can't we take our little scooter aside from the side of the cow? Can't we take our four wheels? Are they more difficult to maneuver than an elephant and a whole entourage of a king? Is possible to do cow protection now because Surabhi cows are not available? This took place just 40 years back. I know there are very, very solitary incidences, but they are there. There was one particular person in Kolhapur, some party. Once he stopped some Yavanas who were taking a cow for being slaughtered. This cow was very much terrified. She was very frail. He talked with them and they said, "What can we do? We have to sell her and we get money." So he said, "I'll give you money, but I do not have so much." They asked for a large sum of money. He said, "I do not have so much money. Whatever I have, give. Free this cow." So they had an argument. Then they went on to fighting. And he was well built. So he did beat them up, but they came back in much force. So then the village intervened. And because the village had more number of those who followed Sanatan Dharma, they said, "You take whatever money is there and free the cow." So the Patil brought this cow to his house. And he gave her a nice place to stay and gave her all facilities, never demanding anything from her. In short, this particular cow who was so frail, so thin, and was being taken to the slaughterhouse, just because of the undemanding and loving nature of this Patil, I don't remember his name. These are cow stories that I've read. She gave milk for her whole life. For her whole life. Even when she did not have calves. We think that Shastras simply speak of something that is in the past? No. And she, her progeny, now third generation, is of the same. They give, and these are local cows. I mean, not the cows that have been modified by, you know, certain injections and hormones to give more milk. Regular cows in the village. They give at least 8 to 10 liters of milk for 3 to 4 years every time they gestate, give birth. They do not have the same quality as a mother. Maybe because they do not receive the same reciprocation from the future generations. The Patil is dead. Now, so, we have these instances and we have an option. And we think in the West, there's just two things that I got from the West. There was one governor of Wisconsin state, USA. He started with dairy farming. he stated, cows are the foster mother of the human race. And on his ranch, he had a board, a notice. Remember that this is the home of mother, mothers. Treat each cow as a mother should be treated. That is how he would treat his cows. And there is another one, Frank Lloyd Wright, another contemporary who was a big time playwright and also used to write columns. Yes, he writes, yes, where her tribe flourishes, there the earth is green, the fields fertile, man in well-being and abundance. She is Hosanna. Hosanna is prayers of glory offered to the Lord in the Christian faith, also in the Jewish faith. She is Hosanna to the Lord. For where she is, at destruction and famine, man laughs. He writes, this is in the early 1900s. At destruction and famine, man laughs. As he salts her, fodders her, breeds her, and milks her. So it is an universal principle. Many people have realized it. We who are very close to Vedic culture, we have to again re-realize it. So I'm so very sorry. This has gone for a long time. I hope this is a nice introduction to tomorrow's powerful classes. So please come tomorrow. And thank you very, very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Tagore Premanande.